Now, chapter number 6, The Wessex of Hardy's Novels. As a novelist, Hardy confines himself to one district of England, which he calls Wessex, the land of West Saxons. In fact, he gave this name to the district in which he was born and with which he was most intimately associated. He resurrected the old name of the locality, Wessex, or the land of West Saxons, which comprises Dorset, Wiltshire, Hampshire, parts of Berkshire and Somerset. There is certain natural and other features of the country within this boundary which distinguish it from the northern and eastern districts. The land abounds with relics from the past, the ancient Roman roads, walls, ruined amphitheaters, fortifications, burials, mounds and Stonehenge and altars of the ancient Britons. The surface of the earth is varied and undulating valleys alternating with upland heaths with deep woods, barns with lubricant vegetation. The soil is chalky and white, and the principal occupation is agriculture. It is rarely seen that a man of genius ties himself to his native place as closely as Hardy has done. What he has lost in variety of scenery, he has gained in accuracy of observation, of sureness of touch. Many writers have been influenced by local patriotism and antiquarian spirit, but nobody has produced such a rare creations of art. Scott, the wizard of the north, brought to life the romance of the dead past, but Hardy shows vividly how the present grows out of the past. Like Wordsworth, Hardy has the power of penetrating beneath the familiar surface and shows that in spite of the restricted field of observation, human nature is not wanting in richness and variety. He presented the towns, villages, rivers, hills and valleys of his chosen district in a thinly veiled nomenclature which any native of the place can identify with exactness. Thus, his Casterbridge in Dorchester, his Budmouth in Weymouth, his Kingsbury is Bury Regis, his Winchester in Winchester, and so forth. Within this area, every road is known to Hardy, every legend, every relic, every antiquity, together with host of families, histories, and traditions. In reviving the old name of the Kingdom of Wessex, Hardy suggests a historical continuity from the time of Britons and Saxons to our own. The march of the time has left many races upon the land, while at the bottom it is the same land. Historical vision is strong in Hardy. The whole sweep of history is present before mind, the Saxons preceded by the Romans and Celts followed by the Danes and Normans. This suggestion of race, their fusion and amalgamation is vividly presented before the reader with scientific accuracy and beauty. Dorset, the portion of Wessex upon the Hardy concentrates, has a character distinct from its neighbor. Here, each influence of history has sunk deeply into the land. The military spirit of the Romans, the ecclesiastical spirit of the Saxons, and the feudal spirit of the Normans, whilst the aboriginal character wished to influence in its own way. Hardy is fond of tracing ancient racial characters in the features of present inhabitants. The memory of pagan times still survives in his Wessex, and the men and women of today still mingle with their dust with those who held in their mounts coins of Hadrian, Posthumus, and the Constantines. A Roman feeling pervades the countryside like the echoes of the Roman Empire. Those of Roman Church also linger here. Wessex is associated with many saints. Those remains are still preserved in its churches and cemeteries. The many ancient normal families like the D. Ubervilles and Peridils, at one time feudal lord, have degenerated into labors upon the soil of Wessex. The very names of the places proclaim their Saxon Celtic of Norman origin. In a land like Wessex, no wonder that Hardy should find dominant emotions and potent passions behind the use and wont of everyday. It is not necessary to take much help from rare accidents of romance. So wonderful a thing is common life, the considered by the artist. In this sample love of simple ancient varieties of life, Hardy has the manner of the great classical poets. Hardy always keeps the spirit of Wessex alive before our mind in his novels. As we read them, we see before us the pasture valleys, the high downs, the long wide roads, and the wooden hills, stretches of woodland, a dreamy cluster of little houses, the village, the deep meadows filled full of sheep or cows, and clear rivers, the two kind of desolate country, the grey, green down lands, and brown, dark heaths. Lionel Johnson conjures up the following vision of Wessex: a rolling down country crossed by Roman road, here a grey standing stone of what sacrificial or ritual origin I can but guess, there is a grassy barrow which is with its great bones, its red and brown jars, its rude gold ornaments still safe in the earth, a brown sky burning with stars, and a solitary man. About the Wessex life and its impact on Hardy, Lord Deville Cecil writes, "There was plenty of tragedy in the life of Wessex labourers, with its poverty and passion. Life to them was life in the raw, dependent and ignorant, exposed alike to the oppressions of the social system and the caprices of the weather at every moment of their existence. The people among whom Hardy was brought up were made conscious of man's helplessness in the face of circumstances. Hardy was the man to realize the tragedy implicit in such a life. He had a tender heart, usually sensitive to the spectacle of suffering. As a little boy, he even hated to see the boughs lopped off the trees. The first time he saw a dead bird, he was struck by an appealing of unforgettable chill of horror. By the time he was 15, a shadow had already fallen across his vision of life. He tells us he remembers lying back in the sun and wishing that he need not grow up. He wanted to stay just as he was, in the same place with the same few friends. The infinite possibilities mature life seems to hold for failure and for suffering appealed him and made him shrink back into such security, and he knew already. His shrinking from life embodied itself in the form of spectral fear. He fancied, he says, that a figure stood in his van with arm uplifted to knock him back for any pleasant prospect he indulged as probable. And not only him, it was the enemy of mankind in general. For Hardy's was a speculative mind, instinctively reasoning from particular observations to a general conclusion. Since the world he looked and seemed so full of pain and disappointment, then he argued pain and disappointment were outstanding characteristics of human existence.